At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Gavlik, who's unmarked as he streaks away into an open goal.
Hit the boundary line.
Oh, the post is broken. Matthews in it.
Boy, oh boy, wow-wee.
He shoots towards goal. What more can you say?
Welcome to the latest edition of the Herald Sun Footy Podcast. In what would have been round five of the season, my name's Lauren Wood. I'm joined, as I am every week, by John Anderson and Scott Gullen. Boys, ISO week again rolls on. It's almost like Groundhog Day, isn't it? Scotty, I've just devoured what I think may well be my 4,000th jaffle of the isolation period. How are you travelling?
The toasted sandwiches are getting a run in, and my son's a bit of a chef, so there's chocolate cookies happening. I know you're into that too, Lauren. So there's been cakes. There's been a lot of stuff happening down here.
Yeah, it's been a little bit that way. Everything you cook that you then have to eat, I'm finding out the hard way. But Ando, how's Chappie going? Obviously the star of the show in recent weeks and the one that's been loving this period.
I don't know if you've found it with Harvey, your dog, Loz, but I know my neighbours, two neighbours have got dogs. The dogs are really confused at the fact that suddenly all these people are home the whole time. And Chappie's thrown him. He's got a few issues anyway, Chappie. He's not the full quid, I don't reckon. But this is really throwing him out, this new stuff. I tell you, Damo's met Chappie. He's been in the 3AW studios a couple of times and actually behaved all right in there. But you're talking about what you do when you're at home during coronavirus. I got on the scales this morning and it wasn't not that it's a pretty sight to start with, but it wasn't good at all. So I've got to do a bit of work to peel back a couple of kgs. So more walks for Chap, I reckon, Loss.
Oh, I think Harvey might be in the same boat too. I've just given him his 87th pig's ear of this period. This is my typical go-to when I need him to be quiet for 45 minutes. So we better get onto the footy because he's known to devour them very, very quickly and he could be barking in the background at any minute. But the hubs roll on, don't they, Scotty? And it's sort of this time last week we were sitting here talking about whether it was even a realistic prospect, but it's gaining momentum.
I know. There seems to be a push. And again, I think what's happening in the NRL is sort of putting, even though they won't come out and say it, but it infers pressure on the AFL if the NRL pull off their ridiculous May 28 deadline. So the AFL has to get a bit more funky. And yeah, the players still are totally embracing. Some are saying, yeah, Harvey, I just want to play. Patrick Dangerfield and others, like we heard last week, are still not sure. But the clubs in the AFL are definitely going down the track of investigating it.
Ando, what do you think? Have you sort of firmed up either way over the last week or so? As I say, it is gaining momentum. Talk that we could potentially have, you know, three situated around the country. Tassie still gets thrown up, WA as well. As Scotty said, though, the players still don't entirely seem on board with it, but it might be the only way we get a season away.
Players aren't on board with it, Loss, because it's never happened before. So they're in new territory, aren't they? And with that comes a degree of uncertainty, and you totally get that. But look, from a selfish viewpoint, I want to watch football, and we all do. But then you've got to think of if your son or was playing footy, or if it happened to be AFLW we're talking about, your daughter playing football, how do you feel about it then? And that might change my view a little bit. I want to know more medically. I still can't believe that we actually played a round of football, given what we can't do now, given we can't play golf, we can't play tennis. At one stage, you couldn't take people through open for inspections as a real estate agent, and yet we could have 36 bodies tearing around the ground in very close proximity, tackling each other. And it comes from breathing from the nose and the rest of it. That made no sense at all.
Well, no, you can't even paddleboard, judging by our latest story on heraldsun.com.au, which seems like a doctor from the Bayside region might have been stung in what I would imagine is the most socially distancing activity that you can do. But anyway, we're still sort of finding our way with all of the guidelines. You mentioned then that the hubs is something that's never happened before. Another idea that hasn't happened before that's been floated in recent days is scrapping the points from round one. Ando, the round that you said you were surprised was even played. Do you think we should just roll on with the season as it is, the win stand, the milestone stand? I personally do.
Yeah, no, I think most – Mick Malthouse raised that, and fair enough. I think good on him for bringing it up. It's an interesting point of view. But if all 18 clubs went into round one in the knowledge that it wasn't going to be for long, but this was the start of the season. And they agreed to that. So no, I don't think they've got any leg to stand on. But no club has actually said that anyway. And round one will count. Those points will be there. And bad luck if your team lost.
We're getting good at kite flying, aren't we, Scotty?
We're in that period of things to talk about, things to debate, and we are running out to a degree. But it's just, I mean, you talk to the players, and I think they, like Melbourne came out, that was interesting. Simon Goodwin was still very gung-ho about telling his players to be ready at the start of May. What did you think of that?
He would have to say that, Scotty, as a coach. I mean, I've got two boys who just hit it off as I sit in the front room now. They've gone off to have a kick of footy with each other from an effective distance and go for a run. They play amateur footy. They want to keep themselves fit and be ready in something good. But you can't maintain the intensity when you're training in a small group and your touch and your match simulation. You can't do match simulation. So when those players come back, it's going to be really, really hard for AFL clubs to produce at the level they normally would. And I would be worried about soft tissue injuries too in a very big way.
John Longmire, Lauren, there needs to be more on the bench. I think there's a great case for that.
Well, yeah, so he spoke the other day saying that there should be an extra interchange player once it starts. That went a little bit further on Monday night. I think it was Matthew Lloyd on Footy Classified said that it should be up to 8 players on the bench. I don't know whether I quite agree as much with Lordo, but Ando, I must admit I'm really in the John Longmire camp on this, particularly given that, you know, there's every chance that we're not going to have a VFL or any other state league competition for any players to be getting any of that, as you said, that such valuable touch, you know, contact, training, all that sort of stuff with their teammates. It's just going to be vital that these guys are getting out there and having a run, even if it's just for 20 minutes in a game.
I totally get that, Loz. And in normal circumstance, I think most of us, well, I don't know if I speak for you two, but I don't want to see the interchange ever increased. In fact, I'd like to see it reduced by 2. But under these special times, totally get where John Longmire's coming from. I think it makes sense. When you're playing such an explosive game as football, and what I was talking about before with soft tissue injury, they're going to have issues and they're going to need as many players. And if you're talking about depth, and Scotty's a great purveyor of AFL team lists, I would think that Collingwood are going to be in a really good position and maybe West Coast Eagles, because those two clubs have really good depth on their list.
I'm with you, Ando. I mean, I had that debate with Jay Clark the other day, actually, in the column. The experienced teams clearly are an advantage, you know, the Collingwood, West Coast, Richmond, Geelong, because you think about the kids, they've lost their training, like you mentioned, it's not at the level it was going to be, and they need time. They're not having the development coaching they need, so I think it's made for the experienced, hardened players for this shortened season.
Now, while we're burning through the issues of the week, which it's quite amazing, isn't it, that we've been without footy for 4 weeks now, and yet there's just so much going on off the field that it's kept us going, along with all of our time-honoured lists, with a new series, of course, to begin in the Herald Sun this week, so keep an eye out for that one, is private ownership, Ando. This is always one that sort of rears its head every now and then, isn't it? Obviously, GWS is the club in question on this occasion, with CEO Dave Matthews putting it back on the agenda a few days ago. You've seen it. I mean, the last time we saw it was in the 80s. Correct me if I'm wrong. I can't see it working, but as you said before, they're desperate times that might call for desperate measures.
Yeah, it hasn't worked. Loz, it started with Geoffrey Edelson with the Swans in the mid-80s. Reuben Pellerman did it with the Brisbane Bears after Christopher Gase had to go unsuccessfully. Then Mike Willacy and a group were involved with Sydney. It hasn't worked in Australia. That's a long time ago now. That's almost 30 years. Obviously, it does work in America, but America have got far more billionaires than we've got. And you just about need to be a billionaire, I would suggest, to be able to guarantee the losses that are going to come with it. and the losses are going to be enormous. I mean, the people who own Manchester United, the Glazer brothers, they don't make a lot of money. They don't do it to make money. I can tell you that they lose a lot of money. Yet with such with a club as financial and as great and as popular as that one is, so it, you need to be basically, who are we talking about? Gina Rinehart, someone in that league, to be able to do it. I just don't think there's enough people in Australia financially viable enough to have ownership of a club. That's where I sit with it. But I wouldn't mind seeing it. I think it's always quite exciting. It's quite different. And I think AFL probably wouldn't mind it, take a bit of pressure off them.
I think it's a great idea. By the sound of the GWS Giants guys, they're serious heavy hitters, Wall Street types who have a genuine following for the club. And they would clearly assist, like Ando said, maybe in this time of need, you find a way where clubs can take, especially expansion clubs, can take on some special assistance, because that would anything would help the AFL, who, as we know, have taken this massive line of credit with a bank. So I think everything's up for grabs. The draft, the game, everything's up for grabs this year. So why not see if it go down that avenue and maybe something good comes of it?
Yep, give it a go. That seems to be the mentality on a lot of things in footy at the moment. But from a more sort of, as I say, more of a footy perspective, it was really interesting hearing Paddy McCartan speak yesterday morning. He spoke on SEN about his brain training that he's been doing.
I've been doing a program at the Epworth rehab program just in my head. And through them, I've been doing a sort of running program that was really specific to sort of rehabbing my brain and my head and getting a bit of fitness back. But it wasn't really too difficult. It was more just sort of re-establishing a bit of fitness and sort of the rehab side of things. And then I've actually finished that program now and they've kicked me off. So, the three sort of weeks before we were kicked away from the club, I'd been training with the rehab group at the Saints and doing sort of a relatively normal program, uninhibited, hadn't been doing sort of anything that was like head-related rehab. I'd sort of kicked all that off. So I sort of went into the break or the coronavirus break sort of relatively rehab-free in terms of my head, which I haven't had for a long time. And now I've just been doing the exact same program that the boys from the club have been doing. So that just involves sort of, for me, building my fitness and sort of maintaining that. And it's three running sessions a week. And then on top of that, some weights and some circuits and things like that. So, I've been training a fair bit and I've been trying to sort of get as fit as I can and just use this time to sort of make up a bit of the ground that I've probably lost over the last year. And then hopefully when everyone gets back into it, which is hopefully sooner rather than later, I'll be back up to speed and have made up a bit of that sort of ground that I've lost.
Ando, he's obviously not on the Saints list at the moment and was pretty open about that he would play anywhere. If he was given another opportunity. Of course, he's a former number one draft pick, so goes okay when he's up and about. But would there be another club that would take a punt on him at the moment? Or, I mean, part of me sort of thinks that maybe it's just best to give it away at this point and, you know, who knows what's going to happen down the track. But he seemed really determined.
How do you pour cold water over the flames of a burning ambition for this kid who's already overcome so much, given his diabetes, where he's one of those rare players that comes off during the game to get an injection for his diabetes. He's lived with that for a long time, Paddy McCartan, and now he's had, what is it, Loz, 8 concussions, and I think Will Pekoski in cricket's fairly similar. Will might be 6 or 7. You think deep down that both those boys have a condition which may make it very hard for them to play contact sport. I hope, really hope that I'm wrong. And I'm not a medical person, but what happens when Paddy McCartan goes into a packed situation, cops a hard knock on the head, which will happen, I hope that he can deal with it. From the outside, I'm not that positive about it.
Could he play elsewhere, Scotty?
Oh, absolutely. I think this is, well, you've got to imagine he's been to that many experts. So if he gets the all clear, bit like Dylan Robertson, if you've got to the absolute experts, they know the situation, they know the sport you play. If they're saying we're confident you can go and play, I reckon the kid has to have a crack at it. And if I'm a rival club, I know lists are going to be shortened, but if he's number 35 on my list, and he's had, what, 6 months of training, 8 months of training before potentially playing next year, I'd be taking him every day of the week. Mm. Back to kid him. He's an elite talent, great character. If the experts, and he's been all around the world, if they say you're not in any harm or you're not going to do anything more to yourself.
A club that could look at him, he came from Geelong Falcons, Paddy McCartan, didn't he, going mm-hmm. back? So that's where he grew up. Geelong is very, very conscious of Tom Hawkins long term. They need a replacement for Tom Hawkins. So it's not going to be Josh Jenkins because he's 30 plus anyway. And Asafa Radicalea may be that player. We don't know. He could be more rough. But Geelong is a club that could look at Paddy McCartan in his home environment. I just worry about when he gets a hard knock. I mean, all the experts can say whatever they like, but they aren't actually there whacking him in the head and seeing how he recovers from it. So until you see that, until he's in the field of play at some level, it doesn't really matter whether it's AFL or playing in the amateurs or suburban footy or VFL. You won't know until he comes through. So if you get him for the right pick, and spots on lists, unfortunately for Paddy, are going to be harder. There's going to be fewer of them next year. We know that already. Hopefully it won't be too few because you don't want to see too many players done out of an AFL career, but that's going to make it harder for him and more risky for a club to take him.
Mm, so much to balance, isn't there? And we'll obviously watch that space. He sounded so determined and spoke about that the fire just burned so strongly for him. So I think we'd all love to see him out there, but as you say, there's so much bigger stuff in play. Hey, just quickly before we get to, we've got a few guests on the Herald Sun Footy podcast today. So before we get to those, just keen to get your views on Robbo's top 20 of the modern era. He went God 1, Duck 2. How did that sit with both of you? Scotty?
Yeah, I'm a senior man. I'm an Ablett senior man. I still just go back to my own experience, obviously, like all of us. I was a Footscray supporter and I, from Colac, I get the train up to go to Companion Park to watch Gaz play, and sort of that stuck with me. And then what he could do and how he could excite the crowd. I'm a Gary Ablett senior man. Carey's dominance in that position was extraordinary. I know it's a tough call, but I'm happy to go with Robbo. It was a pretty impressive 20. I was trying to find ways, holes in it, but I couldn't really find many.
I reckon Ando would probably agree with you on the number one.
Yeah, I'm biased. I mean, I remember hopelessly biased, but I remember speaking with David Park, and I think Parker, Damo might know this, our producer, Damien Tardio, but I don't think he's missed an AFL stroke VFL grand final since about 1950, I'm going to say. So he's seen 70 years of AFL grand finals. When he used to be coaching, and he was such an intense character, and he had Sundays off, and Geelong was playing at the MCG, he would go there. For one reason, just to watch the great Gary Ablett play football. Gary Ablett's the most complete football I've ever seen, most exciting player I've ever seen. He takes you through the gate. When you want to sit down and say, is he the best all-round? Is he as team-oriented as Jason Dunstall? Maybe not. Did he tackle as hard as some? No. But did he bump harder than anybody? Yes. There are many sides. And was he as tough? Yeah, as tough as anyone ever to play the game, Gary. There's people who got hit by and still recall the thought of it. So I had no problems. I thought Robbo's top 20 was excellent. But I probably would have looked at Peter Matera really closely and also Matthew Scarlett, the two that I thought, but then you got to take two out. I'm not sure who they are.
I'm with you, Ando. The Silvani Scarlett, like Steve Silvani got in at 20. The Silvani Scarlett debate needs to be had, I think. I'm a Scarlett man. Maybe I'm a bit biased, but that's an interesting one out of that list, I think.
Yeah, the only thing with that, Scotty, how many goals did you reckon Stephen Silvani kicked in his AFL career?
Oh, yeah, he went forward and kicked bags of eight, and I've seen it do it myself. Yeah, I know what you mean. He had another feather, didn't he?
He kicked 200 goals. Matthew Scarlett couldn't do it.
200?
200 goals. Yeah, wow. He played centre-half back. We know him as a full-back, but he regularly played centre-half back. He played on Wayne Carey, and he was extremely comfortable at centre-half back. He played as a ruck rover when he was a young player. I'm thinking back in 86, 87 periods, he started off in that position and was very comfortable there. So I think, I tend to think Silvani at times, he might be the most versatile of all those players, and yet we don't always see him that way.
Well, Scotty, we often talk about your column, The Score, which has become the super score in recent weeks in the Herald Sun each and every day, our favourite element here on the Herald Sun Footy podcast and beyond, really, is The Whisper. What have you got for us this week?
Well, I believe, Lauren, there may be a media personality who the great Jack Jones died, as we know, the Essendon legend, and there was a lot of love on Twitter and social media for him. He was a wonderful man, and I think this particular TV person did a very gushing and lovely tribute with a picture, but it turns out they may have only met him once, and it was frowned upon a bit by Potts close to Jack and others.
Oh,
so
no.
I think the old social gushing, trying to link yourself to may have caught someone out.
A bit of self-insertion. Oh, no.
I want you to tell me who that person is when we get off air. That really actually upsets me, Scotty. Those things really get to me, actually. And I need to know who the person is off air.
In this day and age of social media, and as you know, the people are pretty quick to inject themselves, and this one got called out by people close to him. So not a good move.
Not much gets missed in this isolation period either, when everyone's sitting on their phones, on their couches and on their computers around the place. There'll be nothing getting past anyone. Hey, we need to get to our guests. We've got two coming up. We've got one man in relation to the anniversary of Waverley Park, one of my favourite footy grounds. I know it's not much loved by many, but I spent many a day there as a kid. And then Ando, we'll be getting to your best side of the last 50 years a little bit later on, and I reckon you might be looking at a powerhouse. That Waverley Park was a regular for me as a youngster. Obviously grew up on the Mornington Peninsula, so it was nice and close for us. Dad could play golf on a Saturday afternoon and Mum could still take us to the footy, put us in the car, watch the game. It often took longer to get out of the car park than the entire game went for. But it was a love it or hate it sort of place, wasn't it, Scotty? Old Arctic Park. It was pretty barren at the best of times. What, any fond memories for you? It's 50 years this weekend since its first game was played there. So it's turning the big 5-0.
Yeah, I've got a few. I didn't mind it, actually, Lauren. I mean, for work-wise, I was just starting out, you know, in the 90s in sports department. There was some long, dark nights. You couldn't find your car. It was minus 10 degrees. You know, the likes of Jeff Poulter and others were annoying you, Ando, as you're trying to find your way to your car. So they were great times. But I mean, I'm a Footscray man. I saw one of my great memories, 1992 semi-final. I live with a guy, Mark Doran, you probably know, Mad St Kilda, like you, Lauren. And we travelled up there. I wasn't working. I'll never forget it. We had a few beers and Chris Grant kicked 5 and just, he was already a star. It was only his third season from memory, but that was the day where I watched him and went, I fell in love with Chris Grant and we won by 5 goals. Dougie Hawkins kicked 3. Danny Delray, one of the great Bulldog names of that generation, kicked 3. And I actually didn't mind it. I thought the footy was great to watch at Waverley Park.
Yeah, you mentioned there about the weather. It was exposed, I think, is the word to probably use. It's all turned into houses now, which is really sort of a strange sight. As you drive down the Monash Freeway, there's one stand remaining. I look back to a 96 pre-season cup for mine. It was a night match against, it was St Kilda and Carlton. I reckon there was something like 67,000 people there. And St Kilda won by about 50-odd points, and I'll never forget it, Ando, because I managed to catch a piece of a firework. And as an 8-year-old kid, your team has won a trophy, which was pretty slim as a St Kilda supporter, by 50-odd points. You get to run on the ground afterwards and you catch a piece of a firework. So I loved it. We used to always run across. We sat in the same seats every single week and we used to run across the ground, my brother and I, at the end of the game, and we'd hang off the front of the 3AW box where Rex Hunt and the crew would obviously be taking talkback calls after the game, and all us kids would hang off the front, just, I guess, hanging for a little bit of attention from what we considered to be celebrities back then was the footy teams on the radio. But, Ando, I reckon you might have spent more time there than both Scotty and I combined over the years, have you?
Yeah, I was out there a bit, Loz. The games, I remember, obviously, Gary Ablett's individual performance in the prelim final of 1989 against Essendon, which is arguably a more complete game than the grand final a week later. I think he had 25 possessions and kicked eight. And I saw him in a night game out there against Carlton playing on Tom Alva, where I reckon he kicked five in the third quarter. That was something else. The game I remember not involving Geelong would be North Melbourne playing Hawthorn, 1994. I'm going to say it's a qualifying final. And it ended tied. I think it was the first final ever ended in a draw. And then North went on to win pretty easily in extra time. Wayne Carey had a, Carey had something like 35 possessions. And I think Darren Jarman and John Platten were equally as brilliant for Hawthorn. The three of those players were just so good on that particular day. That sticks out. And also the 91 grand final, I went down to the bar and Lionel Rose, the late Lionel Rose, world boxing champion, was there. And they'd thrown Fighting Arata out from Japan, who was Lionel's opponent when Lionel first won the Bantamweight Championship. Fighting Arata didn't speak a lot of English. And I don't think he ever drank, but by God, Lionel got him fixed up that day. By the time I got to the bat, I think they were in the Batmobile. If not, they were in a car following it. Fighting Arata was off his head. He didn't know. It was really funny watching the two of them. Lionel had him in a headlock. He never wanted to drink with Lionel because he went pretty hard, but that's a favourite memory for mine. Sort of away from footy, of course, Loz and Scotty, but my favourite footballer out there, I think, games I saw play would be a bloke called Daniel Harford. I reckon he's the best player I've seen at Waverley over the period.
Well, one of his games actually sits among my worst memories at Waverley Park, and I was hoping we might be able to get through this segment without talking about it, but our producer Damien Tardio has lined up half for one specific reason. Of Half's 162 career games, he played 51 at Waverley. His next best was 49 at the MCG. So it's a ground he knows well. One particular one that we must ask him about, as I say, a shocking memory for me, but obviously a great one for him. So let's catch up with him.
What a remarkable effort. 9-1 at quarter time. 11-4 at half time. Trailing by 44 points, but this Hawthorn team has certainly turned it around, much to the effort by that man on screen on the ground, on his back, picked himself up to kick a goal.
Well, it's one of the great comebacks. Bill Collins wrote off Kingston Town at one. We virtually wrote the Hawks off when they trailed by 51 points at quarter time, and they're going to get up and win. So I guess as commentators we should learn, but the Hawks will look at this tape back for a long time. Be great motivation for them, a bit like the Aussies in the cricket the other night.
And a bit like the old Hawthorn sides in the late 80s, in the 80s, when you just never write them off. They come from impossible positions.
But how they've come back, they've worked and worked and worked. And there's the siren. And that does cap one of the most remarkable Hawthorn victories I have seen.
That is a remarkable victory. Just the exuberation on every player's face. And that's what you play footy for. Any competitive sport on a collective basis, so you can share the memories of a victory of this ilk. There's Salmon. He's shown all his experience today. Nick Holland was outstanding. Anthony Rock at times chipped in. Half of his two goals in the third quarter. Always oozed class.
Well, as we mentioned, we are joined by a man who knew Waverley Park very, very well, Daniel Harford. It's great to have you here on the Herald Sun Footy Podcast. You're one of our faves. Now, start us off. How's ISO life going for you?
Oh, look, I'm battling. Great to have you on part of my world today too, just by the way, so I appreciate the input. Battling a little bit. I'm all over the shop. I like structure. I like routine, and I'm taken out of it, and I don't know what to do with myself, but I've learnt the art of the list. And the importance of the list for everyday life at the moment. So that's what I'm clinging to. I was often way left by my beautiful wife at the night time or in the morning. There's a list of things to do. So that's keeping me occupied, but I'm not comfortable with the world as it is.
Sounds like a real sort of elite athlete type mentality, given that you've come from the structure of footy clubs and you need a list in your life. I might need to adopt that. I'm all over the shop still. We're nearly 4 weeks in, so... I'll take that advice on board. But we are here to talk about Waverley Park. Of course, it hits the big 5-0, 50 years since it hosted
its
game, which is quite amazing to think there's only that one stand there now. But you knew it well. We reeled off the stat before, 162 career games, and and nearly a third of them were at the Great Arctic Park.
Yes, that was the venue for the Hawks at the time. It was home. And I remember in my first year playing at Waverley, and I played a few under-18 games there and Teal Cup warm-up games and that sort of thing. And I just remember how big it was. Oh, bloody hell, how am I going to go playing on this every week? I remember after my first season, they asked me what I thought. Somebody asked me what I thought about Waverley Park. And I said, it was way too big. And I remember getting some feedback from Darren Pritchard. Indirectly it was. We did a team meeting, and he referenced that comment that I said it was too big, and into saying it was an advantage for us, and you've got to get that in your head about that's the way you've got to see. Yeah, it's a big bloody ground. You get really tired and sore and all that stuff, but you've got to use it as an advantage. So that sort of stuck in my head for a long time, that little inadvertent clip there from the great Darren Pritchard. And I got my head out of my backside and used it as an advantage for 50 or so games, I think it might have been at Waverley.
Just on that half, the actual dimensions of Waverley, and I haven't got them in front of me, but were they any much different than, say, the MCG?
I don't know. Off the top of my head, I don't know. It just felt like it was a massive wide ground. And we know the cricket ground, the MCG, is quite a round ground as well, but it just felt like it went forever from wing to wing, and getting it from one side to the other was borderline impossible unless you had open play and unopposed passage. So it just seemed to be a really difficult ground to cover, certainly for a young fella anyway, but maybe as I got a bit fitter and a bit more mature physically, it was a little bit easier, Ando.
Yeah, it's all to do with fitness, which you've been working on now. As I heard you say before, you've been running to work each day to try and get yourself a bit UKG, which in theory sounds great, but please explain the realities of running to work.
Yeah, well, in this world of isolation and lockdown, my work is my study, so it's about 3.5 metres away from the bedroom. So running to work and running home sound like a great idea, and I feel good mentally about it, but the scale suggests it's not doing a hell of a lot. I might need to find another outlet.
It's a quick trip, though.
coming home is much quicker than it used to be.
Oh, yeah, no traffic. It's fantastic. Now, this one I mentioned when we were introducing you here on the Herald Sun Footy podcast, that this sticks out as one of my worst memories of Waverley Park. So I'm using this as a bit of a catharsis opportunity to try and sort of exorcise the demons. Take us back to round 12, 1999. You were playing against the Saints. I reckon I can pinpoint the exact timber bench seat I was sitting on. It was yellow. The Saints led by 63 points 5 minutes into the second term. Take us from what happened here, because I cannot relive it.
Yeah, well, I mean, but the key to it was a funny game of footy. God, it was an unusual day in the office. We were getting absolutely mauled from start to finish. I think the Saints kicked 9 goals in the first quarter and we kicked 1 or something. And it was quarter time. Fair to say, Ken Judge wasn't overly warm in his affection towards the players at the time. And we came out for bloody hell. What has happened here? I think was Tim Watson coaching the Saints at that time? I mean,
he was. Yeah, 99.
And they were all over us. Harvey was all over us. Burke was killing us. Who was kicking snags for him?
Jason Heatley might have been. It was marked in my record and many times that day.
Yeah. Stewie Lowe was kicking snags. And Barry was doing things. We were just getting a panting all over the park. We couldn't get our hands on the footy. I remember that. And at halftime, I remember Angelo Lekas, I remember this being written up too in the papers the following day. Angelo Lekas, who barely said anything ever, stood up in front of the ripple as we were mingling around the change rooms at Waverley, and he says, "It's not over yet. It's not over till we say it's over." And it's a little throwaway line that you need someone to sort of say just to keep you focused and give you a chance mentally to get back out there and compete, thinking you're a half a chance to win. And for whatever reason, because it was Lekas, it sounded different and it had a different meaning, as if to say that if Lekker believed we could, and this was an unusual thing, if Lekker believed we could, then why bloody couldn't we? And I don't know what the plan in place was. I can't remember what the plan was after halftime to the turn of the round, but I do remember we kicked 10. Spider River gave away a double 50, and that stands out in my mind as one of the key moments where we started to get our bit of a tail up. And then I kicked the goal, Paul Salmon kicked the stoppage inside forward 50, and I signalled to him. I was going out wide, right forward pocket, the right of your TV screen. If you're watching it, if you remember the vision from Waverley Park.
I said, I just gave him the nod, the wink. I'm going out wide. Just get it out wide and let me do the rest. So he did. He got a real clean punch on it. And I got into space, the truth, quickly under my boot, and it went straight through the middle, and it was never missing. And I got pretty excited, as you can imagine. I didn't kick many goals. I like kicking goals. And I kicked it, and it was just that. I think that was the Spider 50 was a real spark for us. Not probably my ties, but I think that was one of the real sparks for us. Got excited. The adrenaline was flowing, and the crowd started to sense that something might happen. So we rode that as far as we could. I remember Nick Holland having a huge second half for us. In that game, he might have ended up with five. And Nathan Thompson was the other one who really stood up that day for us as well. Anthony Rock was there doing his thing. Like we just found our mojo. Joel Smith turned it on. And I reckon Crawford went berserk in the second half as well. So we just found some mojo after that. And it was a most unusual day. And a three-quarter time, we were down by a couple of points after being down by 53. And Lekker's words were ringing in our ears that absolutely it's all over. It's not over. And we rolled away with it. And late in the last quarter, we kicked a goal or took a mark late in the 450 late in the game. And Dutchie went, sent it through for a win. It was an amazing day. I'll never forget the feeling of coming back and the adrenaline that coursed through my veins that day, because we had no right after the first half or the first one and a half quarters to be anywhere near it. But we found a way, and just the adrenaline wave was just extraordinary.
In terms of comeback games, wasn't half, there was that one between North Melbourne and Essendon at the MCG a few years later, not that long, only 2 years.
Yeah.
And I think North went led by 11 goals halfway through the second quarter, and Essendon got back into it. And there was one with Hawthorn up in, against Brisbane Bears, I reckon. And
yeah, 95, yeah.
95, yeah. Were you there then?
Yeah, that was my first year. I remember that vividly. That was a disaster. That was 40 odd points at three quarter time, I reckon, that game.
Yeah, I think you're right. Obviously,
and 45 points at three quarter time. We lost by seven.
Yeah, that's extraordinary. That game, we were talking about Waverley, talking about the dimensions earlier. Waverley, well, the MCG is 139 wide, so it's a cricket ground because it's a circular ground, as we all know. Waverley is 144 wide, so it actually is wider than MCG. And in terms of length, the MCG 162, Waverley 182. So it's a huge crowd.
Oh, there you go. I was right.
You were right. Exactly.
It wasn't just perception. It was reality. Oh, that's good to know after all these years.
There you go. You can sleep easy after a long commute.
Would it be fair to say part of the perception was because the stands were set so far back, that was really poorly designed. They designed that thinking they were going to put a second or third tier and have a roof on it, and that obviously never happened.
Yeah.
And so did that make it feel a bit, I don't know, wider, broader, emptier in space than the MCG, for instance?
Yeah, and I suppose the rake of the seating too, it was quite flat. It wasn't really steep seating. Look at the MCG, it was the top tier, and you think of how steep those seats are, and you're sort of hanging over the top of the ground, where Waverley, it was quite a flat gradient that went up along the boundary. So it was that made it feel probably a bit more vast as well. And I reckon there would have been 10 or 15 metres between the boundary line and the fence too, most spots around the ground. So that would have added to that feeling of space and this big canyon of grass that you had to try and manoeuvre around and try and get a kick.
Hey, never mind the design of the ground. Whoever designed the car park had plenty to answer for, I think, out there. As I said earlier, some weeks it felt like it took 3 hours to get out of the place. But, hey, we look back with wonderful rose-coloured glasses on what a great experience it was heading out to Waverley Park at half. We thank you so much for joining us here on the Herald Sun Footy Podcast in your incredibly busy days of ISO. What are you watching? How are you feeling your afternoons?
Well, I'm in the middle of a test at the moment. I'm spending a bit of time with the Australian cricket there, and I'm absorbed, absolutely absorbed by it. So I'm loving every minute of that. Still getting through some suits activity, and the blacklist is getting a watch as well. So I've got enough to keep me busy when the kids aren't on the bloody computer.
Very, very good binging options via the one and only Daniel Harford. As I mentioned earlier, you're one of our faves here, so we thank you so much again for joining us, and we'll chat to you soon. Thanks.
Let's get footy back going. See you guys. You're simply the
best. Better than all the rest. Well, Ando, a fixture of the Herald Sun footy podcast in recent weeks has been an advent of yours, the teams of the half centuries. You're working your way through. We've had Brisbane, we've had Carlton. You've now turned your attention to the Pies, which has obviously got some interesting characters to take in over the years. You're selecting them in position, just to refresh the memories of our listeners or those that might not have caught up on the last couple of weeks. It's no easy feat. I've said it in recent weeks that I don't envy you trying your hand at this, but take us through the Pies team of the last 50 years. Start us with the back line.
I'd say, Loz, the Pies team is as good as any in the terms of the forward six. No, so in the centre line forward, probably impossible to beat. Ruck and on ballers, the same. Back line, different. So I ended up playing two blokes in the back line, half-back flanks, who didn't play well for me there, and they're both superstars. But I'll come to them very quickly. Heath Shaw, back pocket, no problems with him. James Clement and the other one, he picked himself also from there. Fullback was really hard. You had guys like Michael Christian, Ben Reed, Shane Wakeland, Chris Tarrant. Going back, Peter McCormack, really good player. I ended up going with Simon Prestigiacomo. Not a glamorous player, not a dasher, but he, I'll tell you what, goals are pretty hard to come by on him. He didn't get beaten too many times. And a great club person, as we know. Billy Pickin picked himself centre half back. I could have got Andrew Ireland, Shane Mornwood, Gavin Kosciuszko, all half-back flankers. I ended up picking Nathan Buckley there, who obviously was an on-baller. Buck's coming out of the half-back flanker with DME. And he has to be in the side, and I've got so many on-ballers, so I'm sure he would fit in very easily, as would Mick McGowan, who did play half-back flank 1 year, changing on-ball, brilliant player, McGowan. Centre-line, Mullane, Shaw, Gavin Brown, picks itself. Tony Shaw, I actually speak to Tony Shaw about this, as we'll come to later in the podcast, and when I ran the side by him, he said he had one player he wouldn't have had in. I said, who was that? And he said, myself. He said, I don't deserve to be there with those other guys. I've got him in it, and I've got him as captain as well, because to me, he was the epitome of what a leader should be, and he would do anything to win the game. Half-forward line, Phil Carman, only there for 3 years, but no player shone more brightly than Phil Carman. Travis Cloak, you'd argue Anthony Rocker. I thought Cloak probably moved around the ground better. Dane Swan has to be in it. Forward line, Peter Moore, Peter McKenna, Peter Dacos.
The three Peters.
First ruck, Len Thompson. Edges out, Brody Grundy, he goes on the bench. Scott Penderbury, obviously. And Wayne Richardson, who was a great from the 70s, 60s and 70s, Wayne Richardson. Interchange, Brody Grundy, steel side bottom, has to have been a 22. Could have gone Paul Acuria, Scott Burns, Shane Morwood. Ended up with Barry Price, a beautifully balanced, beautiful kicking centreman from the early 70s. And Rick Barham on a wing who, but for injury, I mean, he was cruel by injury, Rick Barham, but he was a jet when he was going. So that's the side. I'll speak with Shorey and he'll give us his thoughts on it. Love.
Take us through the unlucky to miss list, which is often littered, isn't it, Scotty, with the, oh, I should have been in. Oh, geez, he was stiff.
Well, I'll throw so Travis Cloak's the best in our 40, 50 years. Now, who else was in consideration? He had about one or two good years, didn't he, Trav?
He had two All-Australians. He was the best contested mark for 4 years in the competition. He moved really well for a guy that size. Obviously, kicking was his area, Scotty. Probably, well, the two rockers, Sav would have been in contention for full forward. He was more of a full forward than a centre forward. And he's Brian Taylor, who kicked 100 goals in a season, 80 in another. BT was affected by injury towards the end. But Peter McKenna, pretty clearly, just weight of goals. He was extraordinary, Peter McKenna. Travis Clay, probably Anthony Rocker. Phil Carman played there at times at 188 centimetres, but I'd rather Carman running around the half-forward flank. So really, did they have a great centre half-forward in the 70s? No, they didn't. Craig Stewart was a very good player. He could play back and forward. But in terms of an out-and-out Kernahan type, if you like, no, they didn't. So Cloak would get it for me.
Steel side bottom, he does very well to get in that lineup too, and it.
Yeah, interesting steel side bottom. He sort of grows on me still. And when he gets it, he uses it pretty well. And when they tag, so when you had Swan, Pendlebury and side bottom in the same side, opposition sides often went to side bottom and Pendlebury rather than Swan. And that's because he hurt them more by foot. What's he won? Two best and fairest. He'd been second in a Brownlow medal, second in another best and fairest, third in two other best and fairest, all Australian premiership side, nearly best on ground in the premiership side. He'll do me, Scotty.
And I reckon. Scott Burns would probably stiff.
Yeah, I think a lot would have Scott Burns. I reckon you're right. Barry Price might be the one that people wouldn't have, but I just got this memory of Barry Price that I can't get rid of. He's just a marvellous footballer. Very nice Barry Price, as they used to say.
Well, you picked this man as your captain of the best Collingwood team in the last 50 years. He's, of course, the 1990 Premiership skipper, and I love hearing him talk about footy. I just really have always enjoyed hearing this man speak. So let's have a listen, Ando, to what Tony Shaw thought of your team.
I've selected Heath Shaw in a back pocket. Now, you're his uncle, so you can be accused of being biased, but I think his body of work is such that he deserves to be in that spot, small back pocket.
Yeah, I think that would work pretty well. I think he's just shown that he can sort of come out of two different eras and play really attacking footy and still doing it, although at another club now, Premiership player. His use of the ball is probably the thing that stands out. One-on-one, he can play, above his weight in a lot of areas. So I think he's probably well known now, and of course, for the 2010 Grand Final smother on Mick Riewoldt. But, I think I'd like to have him. He's a great competitor and a great user of the ball.
I know you agree with James Clement in the other back pocket, which is probably your third tool, if you like, just such a clever, reliable footballer, did everything pretty well. So we've agreed on him. Fullback, sure, he's really interesting. Billy Picken probably picks himself a centre-back, someone you played with in a number of grand finals and is in the team of the century. But fullback, you've got players such as Michael Christian, Shane Wakeland, going right back, Peter McCormack, who you played some really good footy with. Look, Gavin Krasiska didn't play there, but he's a good enough footballer. He could have filled in if you needed him to. Ben Reid, of course. But I ended up coming down to Simon Prestigiacomo or Peter McCormack. Where do you sit on fullback?
Oh, gee, it's a different one. It's a really interesting one. We had a lot of variety there, didn't we? But Presty probably was the best stopper of that period. Now, did he play against great full forwards of that time? Peter McCormack would have, of course, we know that. But I think Presty nearly gets it just for his defensive one-on-one over his period of time. He can't play against people out of his era, of course. But, maybe Presty. Peter McCormack was a very good player, not as tall as Presty. Gave away a lot of sizing, could use the ball pretty well too. But I think also Presty's decision on, ruling himself out of a premiership in a way was just showed his thoughts about the Collingwood Footy Club. Now, that's not about ability, but it's about how a person, goes about his football, how his team, all that sort of stuff as a team person is pretty strong. So, yeah, it was one area that I think of a defensive unit where I thought, not superstars, but they all got the job done. But, I'd probably lean just totally through his defensive abilities.
Yeah, you can argue Billy Picken, I guess, with his marking ability and dash was a superstar.
Yep, yep.
No queries with him. Then you go halfback flanks is really interesting. I don't know, who do you think of when you think of halfback flanks for Collingwood?
Well, if I go back to my time, I'm thinking I played with Andrew Ireland. I played with Shane Morwood. Gav Krasiska himself was a very good defender. Of course, 1990 went forward in the final series and became a very good defensive forward for us. But, if you line it up between there, I might even go Andy Ireland. In the modern era now, you can play players who are midfielders back. You can play them forward. Trying to fit in probably a lot of people. I would lean to just Andrew Ireland, just probably over a lot more time at Collingwood and how he went about it than Shane Morwood from my point of view. But if you want to go a different way, you can do that. But they're the two that stood out for me.
I ended up going a totally different way. I wanted to get my best players into the side, and if it meant putting a star down, or a total superstar down at halfback and Nathan Buckley, his delivery into the forward line from there would be just mouth-watering. And, look, I know he didn't play much footy there, but he could play there and go onto the ball or wherever he wanted him to go. And the same with Mick McGuinn on the other half. I've got to get Mick McGuinn in the 18. That's I know you rated him incredibly highly. People will bag me for that, having those two and half-back flanks, but I don't care. Sure, I'm quite comfortable with it. They'll do the job because they're good enough players. How do you feel about that?
Look, it's an interesting one. Both played across there. Matter of fact, I
I played Nathan Buckley on Wayne Carey one day and he did a great job. I think the next one, though, he probably didn't do as good a job as I'd like. But I did play and his rebound was sensational. I understand you're probably trying to fit midfielders in everywhere. Mick McGowan is a star. Great footy brain. His use of the ball. Gee, if you had both of them coming off halfback, their use of the ball would be devastating, I think.
Centreline for me wasn't actually that hard. Mullane has to be on one wing, Darren Mullane and Gavin Brown. I know Brownie also played 40 in a 1990 premiership side, but he's a wingman. He's a state wingman. He's a star in that position. And I picked a bloke in the middle called Tony Shaw, who I've also made captain. The contenders for captaincy were Scott Pendlebury, Nathan Buckley and yourself. I've spoken to players such as Peter Dacos, Brian Taylor were two come to mind who both said you were clearly the best captain they had. I'll give you a votes, mate. You led from the front and you're what a captain should have been. So that's the centre line. You have no say in who gets picked in the centre. Mullane and Brown, I think you'd agree with those two.
Yeah, unbelievable. And the other bloke who was a very good footballer but had a few bit of illness during his time was Graham Wright, of course, second in the Brownlow in 1990 to Tony Liberatore, but fantastic player. But either you couldn't. I think Wrighty would even put his hand up to say, yeah, those two just ahead of him.
It gets tricky when you go forward because you end up getting blokes, you push on ballers to a forward line. And I've done that with Dane Swan, who's got to be in the 18. He goes to a forward flank. The other half forward flank, it wasn't hard for me. I mean, Peter Dacos obviously played a lot of footy there. He played in the centre and whatnot as well. But Dakes can play in the forward pocket comfortably. And Phil Carman, and look, I know he only played 3 years, Sherry, but what 3 years they were. He's on a half-forward flank, and then you're left with centre-half forward, and I ended up going for Travis Clake, who I see is a genuine centre-half forward, if you like, probably ahead of Anthony Rocker.
That's a big one, but I probably Clokey's ability to get across the ground better than Anthony would be the way to look at that. Oh, look, Phil Carman was an out-and-out superstar. He was mad as a meat axe, but... he could play today. Phil Carman would play. Matter of fact, he'd probably be a midfielder with the sizing of the midfielders today. Unbelievable. Peter Dacos, the best player I've ever seen at Collingwood in my time. Gets on that one side of the ground. I'm just so. Who did I miss on the other half forward flank? Who was it?
Swan.
Swanee. Dane Swan. Well, yeah. Swanee, matter of fact, probably like the modern era now. Was the first bloke who could show that, with a big body strength, good core, that he could go from midfield and be very dangerous as a full forward, standalone full forward as such. And that was a hard matchup. So that's happening a lot more now in the modern game. But, I don't know how many Copeland's five, was it, or something like that, four or five?
Yep.
He was a superstar. And I just love, there's a few characters in that side too, John.
Indeed. Phil Carman, you talk about today's footy. He's 188 centimetres, so I guess he would be similar to a Dangerfield, Dustin Martin, Jordan DeGoey, that player who can play midfield and then go forward with devastating effect. He would have been perfect for that role, wouldn't he?
Oh, yeah, and let me tell you, he had super stamina, so never a problem. He was like a cat on the ground. He could jump on your head. He can kick left foot, right foot, 60 metres. As I said, if we could get his mind right at times, and he's always admitted this in public, but probably the most skilled player behind Peter Dacos that I've seen at Collingwood ever.
So Dacos goes forward pocket, full forward, I think. Brian Taylor kicked 100 goals in that period. Sav Rocker was outstanding. He kicked a bag of goals in Anzac days. But Peter McKenna, he's just a standout. Peter McKenna, he kicked 100 three times in that period. And the other forward pocket, Peter Moore's got to be in the 18, and he's the player who's suited best to be in forward pocket who could go onto the ball as a ruckman.
Well, Peter Moore would nearly probably be a large midfielder now. Matter of fact, when he went in the ruck at Collingwood in his career, he was like a ruck rover. Wasn't the greatest tap ruckman, but his follow-up and his feet around the ground, no one could go with. And then he went forward, of course, played in final series there, and Brownlow medalist twice. So, you'd have to go with Morey, no doubt.
And then Len Thompson goes first ruck. Some can argue Brody Grundy, but Tomo in that period was a dominant play, won a Brownlow, a couple of Capelands. I found that pretty easy, just as Scott Pendlebury as a ruck rover, if you like, another on-baller, and the great Wayne Richardson as the rover.
Yeah, good. Yeah, gee, that's fantastic on-ball unit. Brodie Grundy might, push Lenny by the end of it, but, look, you couldn't get a better tap ruckman. beautiful hands, a very athletic person too. So, yeah, Scotty Penery, out-and-out superstar. Wayne Richardson and I, in that era, just come over from Western Australia. Bicton, as they called him, where he came from. It, yeah, just beautiful skill. So, no, I've got no worries with that at all.
That means Grundy can be on the four-man interchange bench. I still side bottom to me. He's done enough. He's been there about 12 years now. He's a 200-game player, premiership player. He's such a clever footballer, still side bottom. And he's the player they sort of tag with Scott Pendlebury, isn't it, when you think about it? So that's the – because he can catch up with his feet.
Yeah.
Then I'd gone harder from you, Shereen. I went right back. I'm growing up as a kid, I just had these great memories, as you would have, of Barry Price just steaming out of the centre. Beautiful stab kicks, or as they were in the day, or drop punts to Peter McKenna. He was such a well-balanced player, Barry Price.
Ah, beautiful, beautifully balanced. Went away from Collingwood, went back to Perth and came back to Collingwood in 79. I played with Baz. I think he only played 5 games that season, but he was at the end of his career there, but what he did in his early days, when you talk about, Richardson, Price and McKenna, that group was just unbelievable, the way that they gelled together. And I think even he loved being on the end of most of those passes, and they gave him hundreds of goals. So, no, I got no worries with Barry Price there.
The other interchange position for me came down to Scott Burns, Paul Lecuria. Both heart and soul players, hard as nails, great clubmen, or a guy called Ricky Barham, who you played with, early doors. To me, probably the upside of Barham was greater than the other two. When he was going, he was more devastating, Ricky Barham. He could cut teams apart.
Yeah, different types. Burns, he was cruel by injury early too, but, yeah, great competitor, great leader. Same with Lecuria, became a tagger, won 2 Copelands in a row. But Ricky Barham, everybody remembers his debut and then also just his speed, did it for a long period of time, kicked multiple goals in a number of games. So, yeah, I'd probably lean that way a little bit, but both the other two could, get in there. And let me tell you, I'm happy to be where I am.
Well, Ando, you mentioned him in the Collingwood side of the last 50 years as one who may have been in contention, but I'm just keen to find out quickly before we go, have you checked on Brian? Is he out of quarantine?
Yeah, I have to tell Brian. I've got to make a call to the big fella later on. I'll do something with him for Sunday and the paper, Loz. But no, Brian doesn't stand still. He's moss doesn't grow under a rolling stone. It's never been more true than Brian Taylor. If you've ever been out for dinner with him or for lunch, normally lasts for about 20 minutes on a long night. He orders as soon as he walks in the room. He's not one for idle chatter. That's not but Brian. Rather impatient person at times, Brian. he's going well. He'll be doing something. I know that he's a very capable person with his hands, and he's got the property down at Lawn down past Scotty at Bowen Hedge, and he's outside Lawn, Brian up on the hill. He's got beautiful views all around the place. He's got a sensational spot down there.
Now, some of the Instagram activity was something to behold with the hashtag IsoBrian. We might have to put our order in for a cheesecake, I think.
Exactly, yeah. I don't think he cooks, actually. That's not one of his tricks.
Hey, boys, thanks again. I really appreciate you joining us from your respective isolations. It's a strange old time for all of us, but we'll keep ticking along here on the Herald Sun Footy Podcast. We'll keep the paper ticking along. We've got a great new series starting this week, Scotty, which you're involved in. We can't wait for that one. And obviously our colleagues, John Ralph and Glenn McFarlane, have got sacked rolling out each and every week. So there's plenty of footy content about. We will be here to talk about it each and every Tuesday. We'll see you then.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.